we are quite safe from your pitiful little band.
This is General Obi-Wan Kenobi, and I sense Tarkin's top shelf may just be on the light side. I don't know about Tarkin himself, but this is a top shelf show indeed.
Tarkin's top shelf is the Phantom's bookends. With each episode, the exploration of Star Wars aspects ensues deeper between theoretical thinking and beyond the books. Of course, all while keeping it positive, yet honest. After all, if one is to understand the great mystery of Star Wars, one must study all its aspects, not just the films.
Hello and welcome to Tarkin's Top Shelf, the only Star Wars literature podcast on the internet. Hosted by myself, Mark Suter, and Becca Benjamin. We dissect and analyze your favorite and maybe your least favorite canon books, and we always keep it positive. How are you, Becca?
Oh, I'm good. It's, it's such a calming feeling to know that I'm home and I'm in my own environment. I've been sleeping better, you know, which is a good thing. Weather's a little odd right now. It's very, very cloudy and gray, but no one wants to hear about the weather. But yeah, I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I'm very tired. I slept terribly on our trip.
Yes.
And then, then now I'm back here. And this morning I was like, I'm going to go back to sleep. And then my mind was awake. So like I didn't. So that didn't work out because I can't sleep in apparently. But I'm ready to talk about Star Wars, because I think that's what people are listening for anyway, right?
Yes, absolutely. Wherever you want to start.
Well, so first of all, thanks to Random House Worlds for the advanced copies of Star Wars The High Republic Temptation of the Force by Tessa Grattan. I actually managed to finish it just before landing in Cleveland.
Nice.
And I reached out to Tessa and said that it was excellent, because it was another one of those books that leaves you wanting more immediately. So, So my non-spoiler quick review is, wow, incredible book. Tessa, when we interviewed her before, was very coy about what she knew, because she clearly knew more because she wrote this book. And it again leaves you like, come on, why are we in the book here? Because I want to read more. And
right.
Now, because they've been really good about these cliffhangers.
Yes.
I loved the book. Thank you to Random House Worlds for that.
It was nice to come home to that. It really, really was. I was so excited. I forgot to, it was a jet lag. I really forgot to take a picture of it. I'm like, oh my gosh, I have to do this, you know? And I'm very excited because the cover's beautiful. I'm almost finished according to my Kindle. I know we have the, you know, the actual physical copy, but we've been reading through our e-readers or NetGalley, whatever you use there. But I've been using my Kindle. I'm 88% through. So I'm almost done. I know. And I already am like, see, a few years back, we did this podcast stage with the Cantina cast, and Claudia Gray was there, and I actually asked her questions regarding Elzar Mann in regards to Anakin Skywalker, and she was like, no, there's nothing in common there, and I'm like, I've got so many questions that I would like to ask again, the same one now,
yeah,
after reading this. But anyway, we will talk about that when the embargo lifts and we can actually talk about it. I got so many questions and it's really good. And I'm just, you know, the writing in phase three, not that the writing in phase two or in phase one or in phase two was, you know, off it by any means. It was great, but it's like, it seems like it was building to get to this point. And now it's just like shooting off. And it, like you said, you just want more now. So much, because it's just like it ends where you're like, wait a minute, we can't be finished here, So yeah, it's just it's amazing
the way that they've built it out. Phase one being like chronologically, phase three is right after phase one, and phase two is like way before. The way they structure that has been brilliant because of the way they introduced the nameless. And it's just, it's kind of horrifying. But I do think that the authors that have done these Star Wars books are very good at playing coy, and they are very good actors.
Yeah. And speaking of them, we might as well do this now. Really, we would love to, if they're listening, thank them for just everything this, well, on Thursday, it wasn't the weekend, but the warm welcome, right? Really, the warm welcome that we received from them, along with Michael, it really did choke me up. I was not expecting that. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mark. They literally ran up to us.
They did. It was wild.
They embraced us and we were like, what is happening?
Yeah. Like they all hugged us except for Charles Soule, because he's like, what are these people doing? So we still need to interview him. We still need to interview him. And I know that he's working on a book right now, actually. Because when you were talking to other people, I was talking to him, and he is working on a Star War. And no details given, which you would expect no details given, because he's very good at keeping things close to the vest. Anyway, yeah, so we will make a point to get him on at some point. And yeah, it was just such a crazy experience, because it was literally all but one of the authors ran up to us, hugged us, were so happy to see us. And funny enough, you know, we were thrilled to be there, because why are we there, right? But they felt the same way, because Star Wars authors have not been invited to these sort of things before. I know that it all came out of the High Republic Publishing Initiative, and so it's logical sense that you would invite the people that sort of hatched these characters. But still, like, the expectation wasn't there. And I think for a lot of them, it was probably just about as last minute an invitation for them as it was for us.
Yeah. No, absolutely. And I think what really, I guess, really shocked them was the amount of cosplay of these characters that have only been in literature and in concept art, and they are popping to life there on the red carpet, and they were just blown away. And it was amazing. I mean, even us, we were like amazed to see all the detail. Actually, since we're talking about that, I want to give a shout out to Lauren. She was the young lady that we sat next to in the theater there, who was dressed as Avar Chris. Such a sweetheart. I actually found her on Instagram, so I was thrilled. So now Tarkin's Top Shelf is following her. I'm following her. I adored talking to her. I regret that we didn't get a picture with her. I could just smack myself. But yeah, that was awesome. And I just still blown away that they can, these fans were able to make these costumes so precise based on concept art. It's unbelievable to me. So yeah, that really stands out. But yeah, it was just an amazing warm welcome. Again, shout out to Lillian and Logan over at Lucasfilm for like literally everything. They put this whole thing together with these invites, and, you know, truly was just amazing to even be on that list to make it there. And then to sit down and have that little session, that little meet and greet with other content creators, that was just wonderful and nice. And yeah, I mean, I was swept away up in it all, and I still can't believe that we were, how did we get here? How did this happen? I don't know.
Yeah, and there are so many people that we met that you'll just have to take our word for it, because there just weren't a lot of good chances for photo opportunities in a lot of the situations. And we had wanted to get some audio clips of other people, but like that didn't work out either. But we just, we experienced it. And it was wild. And yeah, thanks to Lillian and Logan, because like they hooked us up with the invite and the coffee, or you had a Diet Coke, I think. And
yes,
just seeing, there were a lot of people that we knew and a lot of people that we've known online and were meeting for the very first time. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was just the coolest thing. to be there and to experience that in person. I mean, so you were sitting next to the Evar Chris cosplayer. What was her name again?
Lauren.
Yes. So her costume was incredible. She was one of the first people I noticed because, like, her robes, the details were just amazing. Yes. And the crown, the diadem that she had.
Yep.
But then I was seated two seats down from the casting director from the show. And
which is crazy.
Yeah, it's like, why is she up in the balcony with us podcast people? But also in the balcony, you know, the cast of Ahsoka was up there. And Cal Kestis himself, Cameron Monaghan, was there. So,
right.
And I saw DJ Clulo from Lucasfilm was up there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so some people were really brave and like went right up and said, can I take a picture? And then they did. We did not do that, but
no,
we took pictures from afar.
yes. Afar. But anyway, it's incredible because I still can't get over that. You spotted, Diana Lee just walking by and you yelled out Diana, and it was just the cutest thing, because when you think back, she had her arms full of popcorn, churros, drinks, you know.
Yes.
She's walking along and she stops and she's looking, she's like, Becca.
Yeah. And she was like, the funniest thing is she was like holding up the popcorn and the drink, like, look what I got, like, right? They gave everybody free concessions and it was like so exciting to get free concessions. It's like, I get to eat something. Yay. Then she walked by again later and she made a point to wave at us when her hands were free. And then we tracked her down later, got a picture with her. And I'm so glad that we had the picture that her husband took.
That's so much nicer.
Well, because I wasn't in the one that I took. And I'm like,
no.
I don't know. Like, I'm not just going to ask her for the picture.
But I was like, you need, well, no. And she actually messaged it to me. But of course, I was either sleeping or I was in the middle of flying back, because Friday was just awful flying back. All I did was travel. But again, you're talking one side of the country to the other, so makes sense. But anyway, so I didn't realize it until I got up Saturday morning that she had sent it to me. And I was just so thrilled. I mean, yeah, that was wonderful. And I do want to bring up, because I think we did mention it a little bit, but real quick. It was hilarious. Iman comes up the balcony and I'm like, oh my God, there's Iman. And we were talking back and forth and I'm like, you're like, should I yell out Jabba? I'm like, no, don't. Yes, do it. No, don't do it. Yes, do it. You did. And the fact that he put his arm up, he's like, hey, when he said it was such a wonderful moment.
it's like the best running gag that they have.
Right. And it's
that people bring him Jabba stuff.
He is so Ezra. 100%.
Yeah, just a brilliant cast in that show. And then also thanks to the listeners who tuned in for our Instagram live that we did.
Yeah.
We didn't know how that was going to go. And I'm realizing we can do that remotely. If you start a live with Tarkin's Top Shelf, you could invite me sometime and we could talk that way to listeners. And you even have the option, if people want to join in, you can add people who are on there to talk as well.
Cool.
So maybe sometime we can experiment with that because, you know, it was unexpected. It was in the middle of the day, but a lot of people did tune in. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was fun. Definitely. Was
yeah. Fun. And so. I'm sure we can talk about that for hours, but we'll talk about George Lucas instead. How about that?
I love the idea of talking about George. Oh my gosh. Someone who just celebrated his 80th birthday, mind you. So happy belated there, George. But yeah, he's making the news again. Like, a lot. He's all over the place. A lot of this was transpiring while we were, you know, away on Thursday and traveling home on Friday. So I don't know where you want to begin with this, but I did take quite a bit of the quotes from him about what was going on, because he did receive an award.
Yes, he did. So it's an honorary Palme d'Or, which is like the highest award at Cannes Film Festival. And it was presented by his good friend, Francis Ford Coppola.
And it was so beautiful to watch.
It was just a beautiful moment.
That choked me up. Yeah.
And he's been giving some interviews. And the thing is, ever since he signed away the rights to the films, he's been saying some critical things on occasion, or sometimes a little bit controversial, but largely he's one of those filmmakers that he's still worth listening to a lot of the time, because he was always trying to be on the cutting edge. He was always trying to stay ahead of the curve with filmmaking techniques and culture and stuff. And given his background in anthropology, that makes sense. So yeah, but if he says something like one of the big ones, like if Spielberg says something or if Martin Scorsese he says something, it's going to make the news, right?
Yes.
And it's no different for George Lucas. So anyway, where do you want to start with this?
I think, honestly, I'm going to start at the bottom because I absolutely love this. This came out of the Hollywood Reporter, where George says the new films, referring to the sequels, have a lot of talent, great ideas, and production. I feel like they come from my children. Hearing that, essentially, in my mind goes to what Yoda says to Luke in The Last Jedi. We are what they grow beyond. That is a true burden of all masters. That's exactly what he's saying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Am I off on that?
No. I mean, I think that could be a criticism of his children's taste if he feels negative about it, but I don't think so. I think there was a difficult transitionary period for him. As we know, he's been somewhat critical of Episode 7 in the past, just because when they were in pre-production and coming up with a script, they kept having to go earlier and earlier, deviating from his original intention for when things in the movie would happen and sort of the topics that they would get into. And so it's nice to see that he's come around a bit to being able to be complimentary this way, because if you think about it in a lot of ways, like let's say that you had a business that you built for your entire life and you sold it to some young people, you know, and they started integrating new ideas and new ways of doing business and new products that you wouldn't have done. At first, it would be jarring and difficult to accept, I'm sure. But then you realize, wow, the business is thriving. It's still going strong. There's new fans. The people still love the stuff that I worked on. And they've got a lot of new young kids coming in. And as George Lucas has said, his audience was always children.
Yes.
So for him to be able to evaluate it that way and say, you know, they do have a lot of talent, great ideas in production. And that's true. I know that there are some people that like to be chronically mad online about new Star Wars content. But the people that love it, the people that stick with it, I think largely feel the same way. Even if one movie or other might not be your favorite, people usually can acknowledge those three things: talent, great ideas in production. So I think it's a compliment while acknowledging that it's not what he would have done.
I agree. But that's, I mean, that's with anybody, though. You know what I mean? He literally was, with those six movies, telling the stories he wanted to tell. And it wasn't about caring what anyone else thought. That's why even him getting that award is a big deal, because he never was a Hollywood production studio or did a movie for Hollywood. He did his own. He funded his own. You know, I think that's pretty remarkable when you think about it, for him to receive that award and the type of films that he did do. So, yeah, I agree with you with that. And I think it was nice to actually hear him say that. I don't know. Like, you know, yeah, I mean, he's, like you said, he was being complimentary without being like, well, it's not what I would have done. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and where do you want to go next?
Let's see. Well, so he reflected on some of the criticism he's received over his sixth Star Wars film. He said they would say it's all white men, he said of the film's critics. Most of the people are aliens. The idea is you're supposed to accept people for who they are, or whether they're big and furry or whether they're green or whatever. The idea is that all people are equal. And I do understand largely this idea that a lot of the main cast is white people, which is true of most films from the eras that the films were made in, because there's been sort of just this default setting for many, many years that the white men are the heroes. And if there's a strong female lead, she'll probably be white as well. But, you know, if you go back to 1977, we're talking, this is almost 50 years ago now. which is hard to believe, right?
Right.
You can certainly evaluate films, but you have to take into context the era in which they were made and yeah. consider how maybe big of a leap forward it is for the time. So to have such a strong female character like Leia for the time was wild. And knowing that he wanted to cast a Japanese actor as Obi-Wan Kenobi,
yes.
and that didn't work out. And obviously Ewan McGregor couldn't be Obi-Wan Kenobi now if that were
correct.
The case. Mm-hmm. But what I would like to talk about in sort of to give a little context is Star Trek, the original series. You know, this is made 1966 to 1969. And Uhura, she has lines, but she's usually just in the background of a lot of the shots. And you've got this young black woman being an officer on a starship. She's on the bridge. That means that she's important. So even if she doesn't have a lot of lines at the time, it was so meaningful to young black children. Themselves represented there. And she didn't feel like her role was good enough. She was about to quit the show. And of all people, Martin Luther King Jr. convinced her to stay on the show because of how important that visibility was, right? So this is just 10 years before Star Wars.
Right.
And 14 years before The Empire Strikes Back. So just think about where we were culturally at the time. And yes, of course, if the movie was made today with the same exact cast, then I think there would be a problem.
Oh, I agree. Yes.
Because you do really need to think about, like, we're trying to reach the entire world with our production. We want these themes and the things that we get into to be universal. And like George Lucas, like the themes of the Force, he was boiling down the universal themes of all religions to make something that anybody in the world could relate to. And he really did accomplish that. So if it was made today, it would definitely have to be different. And I think that that would be a fair thing to say if it were made today. But I don't think we can apply it backwards to things because things already exist. Much like Lawrence of Arabia. The very actor we talked about, Obi-Wan Kenobi, Sir Alec Guinness, played an Arab in that film, and he was wearing dark makeup. And obviously, if that film were made even 20 years later, it would be deeply problematic. And looking back on it, it's unfortunate, but at the same time, the film is an incredible film. And so you have to be able to kind of engage with complexity when evaluating things, much like Mark Twain's books have horribly outdated language, but even in context, he's kind of showing how ridiculous this language is that's
right.
being used. So it was also a big deal in The Empire Strikes Back when they cast a new major character, Lando Calrissian, with a black actor. Billy Dee Williams coming into the franchise was huge. And that was a meaty role. That wasn't just he's there. Like, he had things to do. And his role carried on through Return of the Jedi. And then obviously he featured majorly in Solo, a Star Wars story. And he was in Episode 9. And so, yeah, I think it's understandable to have today's mindset where we criticize everything based on how we feel today. But and not to say that things are immune to criticism, because I think it's useful to say, yes, this is an all-white cast, and it wouldn't be made the same today. But there were large steps being made at the time and continue to be made because of it. So it's sort of like Star Trek has continued to be this phenomenon, and they've added even more diversity and inclusion over the decades of the franchise. So you can look at where things start and where they are now and come to an appreciation. And, you know, but basically it's a very complicated thing to engage with. And it's easy just to be like, well, it should be this way. It should be that way. And it's the Monday morning quarterback thing, right? Like, woulda, shoulda, coulda.
Right.
And yeah, so we can acknowledge that it was what it was. It would be different today. Maybe it's unfortunate that it's not that, but at least they're making steps now to be more inclusive. And I think, you know, the Acolyte is a very good example of inclusion. So we've come a long way, folks.
Well, oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, going all the way back to the beginning, you know, because he even comments on, you know, that first film and with Princess Leia, I mean, with Carrie Fisher, I mean, she was perfectly cast. There would be, I can't think of another young person, young, you know, young girl, because really, you think about it, she was cast when she was, what, 16 or 17 years of age. She really was, I mean, she was a kid, you know, but
yeah,
there was
only
no
like,
other.
What, 19 when filmed or 18?
Right, right, exactly. So, I mean, that she's young, you know, and she was spunky and, you know, we didn't have that yet. And to know, and he quotes here, he, you know, this is Lucas. He said, what do you think Princess Leia was? She's the head of the rebellion. She's the one that's taken this young kid who doesn't know anything and this boisterous I know everything guy and trying to save everything with these clowns.
Right.
And, you know, right. It's true. And he goes, it's the same thing when he created Queen Amidala. From the prequels, he goes on and he says, you can't just put a woman in pants and expect her to be a hero. They can wear dresses. They can wear whatever they want. It's their brains and their ability to think and plan and be logistical. That's what the hero is. And he's so right. It's the brains. It's a personality able to lead. Doesn't matter what you look like, you know, and that's just it. You're talking, you know, Princess Leia, Queen Amidala. Queen Amidala was 14. 14. And I'm sorry, going back to the theater just recently in the beginning of May and sitting down watching Phantom Menace again after 25 years. And I'm watching her and I'm like, holy crap. Like, she's 14. And the fact that she could lead all these different groups of people and individuals, and then no one knows who she really is until she reveals it, and everyone's kind of like blown away. Obi-Wan, Qui-Gon Jinn, they're all like, what, you know? And
well, I think Qui-Gon knew. I think he did.
Yeah, well, that's just it. reading books now, because it's only in literature format, we know she couldn't even fool Bail. She couldn't fool Bail. She could, you know, she was only able, you know. Oh no! Yes, she was able to fool Bail. Sorry, excuse me. I'm saying that wrong. But even Anakin was thrown off when someone else was, you know, in their in their bed chambers, and it wasn't actually Padme. He didn't realize it at first either. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying. She was. They were all those handmaidens. They were so loyal to her at young ages. They were all very good at, you know, disguise and, you know, being able to portray the same person without a flaw, which I think is pretty amazing. And yeah, we don't give enough credit to Padme, to Leia. I mean, I think Leia does because, you know, she's been around for, like you said, almost 50 years with this. But you think back to what they created, what George did in 77 with Leia, and it blows my mind. Because she really does rescue not just herself, but them too. She didn't have to rescue them, but she did.
So, yeah, I mean, if anything, they were holding her back.
Oh, big time. Yeah, I mean, she even says, will someone get this big walking carpet out of my way? She's like, she's trying to go, man. She is just, she's ready. You
okay,
know? And
so let's just consider the scene in which they all meet, right? So they come up with the idea, let's disguise ourselves as stormtroopers, but then let's just shoot everything up and see what happens.
Right.
Really? Really?
Really?
It's
right.
The dumbest plan. And then, oh, yeah, we're fine. We're fine here. We're all fine. How are you? Oh, come on.
Because, you know, it's
and
Han.
Then,
he can talk his
and
way out of
And then they get
anything.
Her out of the cell, and she's the one that comes up with the escape plan. You know,
right.
Otherwise they would have been blasted in that hallway. And so I just have to say, though, like, we are continuing to get strong women in Star Wars. And I think it is unfortunate how many mothers die in the franchise because... You know, I would have loved to have seen more of Jyn Erso's mother, Lyra. And obviously, we want more Shmi Skywalker at some point.
Yeah. That's
but,
yeah.
And I'm going to tie this back to what we were talking about at the beginning, the Acolyte. Because without giving anything away, because we won't, and that would be horrible to do to our listeners, there are several very strong women in this cast. All of whom have really different characteristics and character traits all of them have different approaches. Like the actors who are playing them have different approaches. The way the characters are written have different approaches. And I was absolutely delighted. And I cannot wait to watch this show with my kids because the performances, the story, the writing, like it's just all so engaging. And it's all because George Lucas put a firecracker of a princess in the cast. And when she blew up, she made the men look like idiots. And it was glorious. Like, think about what she does. Think about what she does, okay? So in episode 4, she gets them off the Death Star, essentially.
Right.
In episode 5, she's the one that, like, leads the assault to try to get Han back. And when that doesn't work, she gets them out of there, right? Then in episode 6, she makes contacts with the Ewoks, and they don't get eaten.
Very important. Very important, by the way. And they give her a dress.
She's the one that rescues Han, right? And she kills Jabba.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, that's just it. I mean, I think back, like you said, going to to episode 4 and that whole, you know, when she meets Luke and he says, I'm with Ben Kenobi the whole bit, and they get out. And then she's like, this is it? This is your plan? And, you know, Han being Han, can't take blame or fault for anything. He goes, well, he's the brain, sweetheart, pointing at Luke. And she's like, you know, she grabs the blaster and starts shooting. They're like, what are you doing? She's, well, someone's got to save our skins. You know, down the, you know, shoot there, flyboy. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, she's already thinking we can get through with the garbage chute, you know? And it was just, yeah, she's incredible. And that's just it. Like, she was able to think through the most difficult situations when everything is happening all at once, like a machine gun, literally. And she's the only one able to think to solve the problem. You got to hand it to her, you know? And it's the same thing with Padme too. Like, you look at Phantom Menace and she's incredible. And she stays silent as the queen, but as Padme, she's very active, you know? So it's insane what George has done. And then it only carries through throughout the newer movies. And you did touch on Lyra. And I will say this, I would have loved to have gotten some sort of spinoff with her from Catalyst, the prelude book that goes into that, because she's so important, because literally she wears the pants in that family. Sorry, George, I know you're not supposed to put a woman in pants and make her a hero, but I'm being honest. She wears the pants in that family. She's the one who had that connection to Saw.
Yes.
Had it not been her, they would have not been able to save Jin or even save Galen.
And they would have never, Galen would have never taken the job and had the opportunity to build that flaw into the Death Star in the first place.
Correct. Correct. Right. Which Jin was the influence for that. He was doing that for her.
Yeah. And so then you've got the unfortunately cut scenes of Padme from episode 3 where the rebellion forms. And even though she doesn't live to see it, she's working for a sunrise that she never sees.
Correct. But her children will.
Think about that.
That's just it.
That's goosebumps right there.
Right. No, I got him. That's how I'm doing this.
And then just speaking of strong women, like obviously a lot of the new TV shows that have come out have a lot of strong women. There were some in the Solo cast as well. And then obviously Daisy Ridley as Rey. Talk about somebody who went through stuff to come out on top of the end. I am just so excited that she has another film coming out. Now, she hasn't read the finished script for her upcoming film.
No,
but
it's imminent.
Says it's imminent. Okay. Yep. So let's see. This is her quote. So this one feels the same because I'm playing a character I've played before, but it's different because it's been many years. I would hope I'm coming back as a richer artist, but also I'm in different hands. So that's interesting and new, a different story. So that I think will be a discovery as we go on. Now I'm excited because she's doing a press tour, obviously, for Young Woman in the Sea.
Yes.
I am upset that it's not opening anywhere close to me because I want to see it. And it looks like a really good family movie to just show what women are capable of, which, spoiler, is everything.
thank you.
So I'm just so pumped because if you look at her character arc, it's similar to Anakin in a lot of ways, but she handles it all so much better. Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there's something to be said about, and I know I'm gonna get, you know, probably some negative feedback on this, and I apologize, but there's something to be said about the Skywalker lineage. I know she's not blood related by any means, but she's still a Skywalker. Whether you want to feel that way or not, it is what it is. Her name is Rey Skywalker, so there you go. But the Skywalker women seem to be more in check with their emotions than the men. Huh, go figure. And that all starts with Shmi. It does start with Shmi. I'm sorry, but it so does, because I look back at that. I'm, again, in theater 25 years later, watching her be okay, well, at least to her 9-year-old son's face, be okay with him making this decision and leaving her and knowing that she's probably never going to see him again. But she puts on a brave face and tells him not to look back. There's something to be said about that. That is strength. As a parent, I don't think I could have ever done that with any of my kids at that age of 9. Knowing that I may never, ever, ever see them again, you know, putting faith in the hands of this person I just met, who's a complete stranger, that you're going to watch after my son. Which, obviously, that doesn't go well or go to plan, because hours later, Qui-Gon's gone, literally. No one's ever really gone, but you know what I mean. And so, yeah, I mean, it all really begins with Shmi. You know, and I will say, Leia really did pick up those traits that Shmi Skywalker has. And it's a combination of Shmi and of Padme, obviously, there. But, yeah, I mean, Skywalker women just seem to have it all in check. They endure a lot. So, yeah, I'm excited to see where Rey goes and what this is going to be. You could tell at these press tours for Young Woman and the Sea that Daisy is actually very excited when she's asked about the new Rey movie. Like she said, she hasn't finished, hasn't read the finished script yet, but it's real close. But she's happy to do it and to see where this new story goes, and we are too. We have no idea what's coming, this new Jedi Order is going to look, you know, if it will even be called that, a Jedi Order, because when you think of that, again, I think back to these interviews now that we've recently read about Leslie Headland talking about how it's an institution, and I just don't see Rey being one to basically rebuild an institution.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Oh, I agree with you there.
But we could be way off. But I'm just saying, this is where I'm going with.
Or if she rebuilds it, it's better, you know, because you can rebuild something better with structure. Now, I know that you feel like you're going to get criticism for pointing out the fact that she's Rey Skywalker. You know, it's interesting. I don't know if you've heard about this, but people can legally change their name. That is a thing, and you can change it to whatever you feel like. For instance, have you heard of a famous actor named Karen Elaine Johnson?
Yes, I have. Yes, I have.
Yes. So Whoopi Goldberg. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Nicolas Cage, by the way, he is a Nepo baby because his last name was originally Coppola. Have we heard that name before?
Oh, yes, we have. We're talking about that at the
interesting,
top of the
show. Interesting. Yeah. Vin Diesel, we all knew that was a fake name, right? His real name is Mark Sinclair, okay? So people can just change their name. They don't actually need permission to change their name. It's not like you copyright names. But all of that aside, there's the family you're born with and the family you find, right?
Correct.
And sometimes you identify more with the family you find than the family you were born with, and that can be for a variety of reasons. You could have had a positive family background, but you find an even more positive friend family, right?
Right.
Or it could be you came from a terrible situation. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't want to walk around with the last name Hitler. Basically, all the Hitlers that existed changed their names because one person ruined the name forever. So it doesn't matter how many great Hitlers there were before Hitler. None of them wanted that name anymore, right? It's the same with Palpatine. So, of course, you're going to choose something else. So why not choose the best possible name, the one that means the most to you? Because if you came from having no name that you knew, and you had a choice between Space Hitler and Skywalker. What are you going to choose? I mean, come on.
And that, I think
it's literally the dumbest thing that people are like, well, she can't be because that's not true. She's not really Skywalker. It's like she changed her name because she doesn't want the other name. What's wrong with that?
Well, and that's just it. And I think it really kind of, it's in line with what Leia did. Leia kept the Organa name. She never went back to Skywalker. You know, she never even kept Solo. She stayed Organa for a reason, because we get this little itty bitty explanation in the Obi-Wan Kenobi series when so sweetly Bail Organa gets down on his knee to talk to little Leia, and he tells her, you're an Organa through and through, you know, and she stuck with that. Because think about it, when you go flash forward about 5 years, 6 years before The Force Awakens, and it's all revealed who Leia's biological family is.
Yes.
And that doesn't go well for her, because they don't hear Anakin Skywalker. They hear Darth Vader.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's so sad that you forget that. Well, not they forget, but of course, that generation is gone, where Anakin Skywalker was known as the hero with no fear. He was a hero of his time when he was in the height of being a Jedi Knight. He really was. And it's sad. What happened to him is tragic. I am not justifying the fact of what all the atrocities that he did as Darth Vader. I would never do that. But people, and especially even in this context of what's going on in that galaxy specifically, they've forgotten. All they know is Darth Vader. And then when they realize that even Luke Skywalker is Darth Vader's son, even that gets a little tainted. I remember this moment.
Yeah.
And Leia was always like, it doesn't matter who you come from, it matters who you are. What does your heart tell you about who of the person that you are? All the things that you do. That's why really now, after all this new things, all this new literature that we have, and when you see that first moment in The Force Awakens where Leia sees Rey for the first time, and everyone is walking around them, and it's just a sad moment, you know, of everything that has transpired, and Leia goes straight to Rey and hugs her. Because Leia knows who she is, but she senses what's in her heart and knows she's not a bad person. She's just had bad things happen to her. And she's going to welcome her with open arms. And she really does. And I, because she knows what it feels like. See, I just, now that we know all this, it all makes sense and it's beautiful. Honestly,
Shadow of the Sith, really good book, explained a lot of things. We still don't know, because Luke suspected who she was, but Leia knew. So I'm still curious how Leia knew.
Because Leia understands people. Leia had
I think she has something within her that she, like Luke can see the future. Maybe she can see the past of a person.
I think that, and I also think it's very similar to Buriaga that we see in the High Republic. She's like an empath.
Yeah.
I think she senses feelings and what's going on within them, within an individual. And it took her a while to actually probably figure that out. But I think that's where she's at with that, because she really does spot her through the crowd. And she goes straight to Rey. Because Rey, I mean, if you think of that moment, Rey looks lost in that entire crowd. She's heartbroken. She just looks like she has lost all hope. Faith is gone. Yep. You know, what do I do? And Leia's the one who brings her back in, you know, and lifts her back up again. And I think that's why that connection that we get in episode 9 with the two of them is very mother-daughtery. It is. I mean, rather,
for sure.
I know Rey's calling her Master Skywalker, which just, that gives me goosebumps, hearing Leia be called Master Skywalker, or just Master, like in general, just like,
yes,
she deserves so all of those flowers, all of it. It's just like not taking away that relationship between Rey and Luke, but there was something really special brewing there in between those women. And I would have loved to have seen more. We also get in that novel specifically for that movie, that really detailed training session in between Luke and Leia, which is just beautiful. And how Luke even says that Leia really was, you know, light years before, like past him with what she could do. And she would have been just an amazing Jedi, but her heart was for politics. That's where she belonged. She felt she could really have more of a reach there to help the galaxy rather than be a Jedi. But yeah, it's just, we could go on because we both want that. We both want this Leia training series. Like we're foaming for it. Like,
yes,
so bad.
Yeah, I would love to see Leia Jedi Knight explored more because, you know, all we know is that she gave it up. But we don't know when.
No. I'm and assuming Ben was already born.
To have left it intentionally vague.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it. Like, he could have been 3 years old, 5 years old, 10 right. years old, you know, before she really gave it up. We don't know. We don't know for sure. But yeah, I would love to see more. And then to end it on a really funny note, the night before the premiere, we missed this because we were there, but right next door to the theater, Patton Oswalt was on Jimmy Kimmel's show. And he talked about how he heard from Jon Favreau that the opening of the Book of Boba Fett, where the camera pans down from the twin sun down to the mouth of the Sarlacc, and you see Boba Fett's hand emerge. Okay, yes. So Patton Oswalt was on Parks and Rec, and they wanted him to do like a filibuster speech about whatever he felt like. And he went on for like 7 minutes straight talking about how a new Star Wars movie opens and how it would cross over with Marvel. It's one of the most glorious things I've ever seen. And they didn't use all of it, obviously, but the whole point was he was just able to off the cuff speak on this forever. And he says that the timing of the way that Boba Fett emerges from the ground, the way the camera pans down, you can almost time it perfectly with the way that he described it while doing this made up rant for Parks and Recreation. So definitely look that awesome. Up and also look up the clip if you've never seen it. Where he goes on a long rant filibuster. There's an uncut version somewhere, and people are just dying because they don't know where he's going with it, and it just right. goes on and on and on. But yeah, the way he described Boba Fett coming back, and as was then shown in the Book of Boba Fett, was like the same, exactly the same as he described. It's great. And we That's missed awesome. It because we were a little bit busy on Thursday, right?
Just a little. Yeah, just a little. But speaking of Boba Fett, do you think we're going to see him in anything that's upcoming? I mean, I don't know anything, and I'm just wondering what your thoughts were on that. Since you brought up Boba Fett,
I want to see him more, and I have a feeling that whatever Dave Filoni is working on, and I have no insider knowledge of this whatsoever, so don't quote me on this. But as far as we understand, it's going to connect somehow to the TV shows that have been worked on. So characters from The Mandalorian include the reemerged Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, obviously Mando and Grogu. So I wouldn't rule Temuera Morrison out yet.
Okay, good. I mean, I'm hopeful too, because I mean, they obviously are eager to come back and do whatever. You know, and I think that's a wonderful opportunity. I know there's rumors floating around. I don't know who said who or who said what, but someone was saying that there's been talk about Dave Filoni wanting to do a live action spinoff of the Clone Wars. And again, it's rumor. I don't know anything. I was picking up on what people were talking about. It was all online. I think I saw it on Facebook, of all places. And I was a little taken aback by that because I'm like, how much Clone Wars can you do? I love Star Wars, and I would love to see Hayden do anything with his character because why not? He wants to prove that he could still do it. Eat an apple, sure.
Yeah.
You know.
Chomp.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he eats Shirua fruit on Naboo, so what on an apple? But, you know, I don't know if you thought there was any, you know, substance to that. Like, you think, I mean, what do you think? Think he might actually do something like that?
Why not?
Okay.
I mean, why not? I think that it's, I'm always interested in more. And obviously if it's Star Wars, I'm probably going to watch it. And I really, you know, like, I've liked all the shows, so maybe I'm the weird person there.
I think the concern around that would be taking away what's already been done in animation.
Yeah.
taking that credit, that, you know, almost like doing a disservice to those actors that portrayed who they did in the animation. And I understand that. I think that was the biggest, I guess, negative feedback that we got with the Ahsoka series, was that people really wanted those voice actors to reprise their roles, but in live action. And I understand that, you know, I really do. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, you had how many years of the Clone Wars where it was Ashley, you know, doing Ahsoka, Matt Lanter doing Anakin, you know, James Arnold Taylor doing Obi-Wan, and, you know, and what have you. The list goes on and on and on. And also with Rebels, you know, with, you know, everyone that voiced the original, you know, all the original characters. And it's hard, you know, because it is such a different, it's a different creative outlet, you know, animation versus live action. It really is.
Voice actors are cast for their voices.
Yes.
There's a lot of voice actors capable of many voices that look nothing like their character. Mm-hmm. I mean, are we going to criticize, you know, Frank Welker for not looking like Megatron? Right?
True.
I mean, you're
right.
And obviously you're not going to bring Frank Welker on for a Transformers movie and have him play Megatron on set. I mean, because Megatron's fully CG anyway, and he's not a motion capture actor either. So you wouldn't have him do motion capture for Megatron if you were going to approach the character that way. So, like, I understand, like, I was somewhat disappointed that actors weren't able to reprise their roles in live action, but then it's like, well, you look at them and it's like, okay, well, this is not really what the character looks like exactly. And the person that they cast ends up looking really close. So I get it and I don't get it at the same time, equal measure. But yeah, if they rehash old ground, the only problem is that there's potential that you could end up accidentally contradicting stuff, but as long as it's like forging into like new areas that we haven't seen, I think it's all right.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, I think the world between world segments with the flashbacks, it all worked. And I think the flashbacks in general is a fan favorite. We all like those. I don't really know too many people that don't like to see little flashbacks thrown in there. You know, I'm all for it. Give it to me, you know, because it ties things together.
Well, I remember when there was some criticism that The Last Jedi did that because they'd never done that before. But at the same time,
see, I liked it.
Yeah. At the same time, it's like, if we're going to just keep doing the same thing, then what's the point of making new things?
Right.
Like, you got to innovate, got to move forward, got to evolve and go into new territory. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Bring it on. I'm excited for all new Star Wars. I mean, we're down to what? Is it 8 or 7 days until the premiere?
It's next Tuesday, so 8 days. So 8 days. Once this is released, it'll be a week from now. To briefly get into it, because I have a little more time. I loved seeing the first two episodes of The Acolyte. That's kind of what we expected, so that's not a big surprise. I know that some outlets got screeners with the first four episodes.
Yes, yes.
So that's weird. And actually, I'm glad that I didn't, because I don't want to see that many yet. especially after seeing the first two on a big screen, I don't want to see it with my email across the
no front. See, and I was thinking that too, and we actually talked about this while we were together, which was nice, was that I knew a few outlets that had received their screeners prior to a premiere event, and I'm like, I wouldn't have wanted to see that beforehand, because that's why I'm here, and I think that would take away from that excitement of what am I going to see. And like you said, seeing it on this movie screen, which I always say, as much as I enjoy sitting at home and streaming it, Star Wars is meant for the movie screen. It is 100%. That's for how, to me, it should be watched and viewed and enjoyed. And I'm so glad we got to experience that way.
It was incredible.
Right. So, yeah, I'm glad we didn't get spoiled. Not that that's spoiling, because, you know, if you get screeners, you're entitled to that. But I wouldn't have watched them anyway. I'm being honest with you. If we had
received I'm just them. Glad that we haven't seen major spoilers yet, which means that everybody is being good.
Well, as far as I can tell, I know there's been a few people on Twitter saying that they're upset because people that did get these early screeners or did go to the premiere are saying things. And I did put out there that, you know, they are not supposed to. Anyone that has received early screeners or has been to the premiere, whatever, they are not supposed to reveal plot points, you know, character arcs, anything like that. That is a no-go. That is totally going against NDA.
What can we say? What can we say? We can say whether we liked it, which I loved it. We can talk generally about it. Like, there's good action. You've seen some of it in the previews. And if you thought the stuff in previews was good, it's good in context as well.
Yeah.
And I love the characters. I don't think there's any character that I don't like. And I'm not even going to get into specifics. No. But I loved everything that we saw. Oh, yes, we will. You know, we will talk after. Sorry, folks. Just for us.
My way to sum it up, because we only seen two episodes versus the four that a lot of others have seen. And I've been saying this, that, you know, like you already said, echoing back with the whole with the action, it's unbelievable. But for me, as someone, and you, obviously, who have been reading The High Republic, and really enjoying that, and the fact that it's so before anything we've ever seen. My best thing to say that is non-spoilery is that the Acolyte is a time capsule dream for any Star Wars fan. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Yeah. I enjoyed it, and I can't wait for episode 3, but I'll be waiting longer than most people for it.
I'm right there with you. Unless, you know, tomorrow we get an inbox, you know, with early screening, which very well could happen. Today, Lucasfilm is on holiday, obviously.
Tomorrow
is a whole different story.
Yeah, so. I don't know. I'll be really tempted not to do it because it's like, I'm just going to wait till I can watch it properly. So that's our show for today. And we talked about a lot of different things. So if our listeners have any comments or thoughts, how can they reach out to us?
Well, they can always email us at ttspodfeedback@gmail.com. Of course, interact with us on all social media. We are everywhere at Tarkin's Top Shelf. So reach out to us there. Again, thank you for everyone that has been, you know, following us through our Instagram and our threads. It's been wonderful. And I see we've got quite a few new followers now on there. So thanks. Eric on Instagram, I don't remember the last name, but he lives in New York City, and he wanted to reach out to us and thank us for the coverage that we did, because we're his bike ride to and from to work in New York City, and he never could put a face to the voices, and now that he can. He thanked us for what we've been doing the past two years and keeping him company on his bike ride. So, hi, Eric. Thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate it. And, so definitely, you know, follow us, interact with us on all social media, and, if you want to say hi to me, best place right now is either Instagram, Threads, Twitter @YouAreAngelB. And where can they find you, Mark?
I'm at Mark Suter, author on Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. And if you send me a message or tag me in something, I'll see it. You can check out my self-published book, Balkan's Blade, on Amazon. It's ebook or paperback available. Also, you can hear me every other week or so on Idiots Array with Ryder and Alan. If you enjoyed our discussion today, tell that to Reading Club.
Just a reminder, Tarkin's Top Shelf is not endorsed by Disney or Lucasfilm in any way. We are book reviewers, though, for Disney Books, Lucasfilm Press, Del Rey, Chronicle Books, and DK Publishing. Thanks for listening to the show, and may the Force be with you.